on Radio Catskill.
The next time on City Arts and Lectures, we've gone into the archives for a 2009 conversation with the late conductor Michael Tilson Thomas. The longtime music director of the San Francisco Symphony shares stories of his grandparents, stars of Yiddish theater, and talks about making classical music accessible to everyone. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
The Supreme Court is seen as the last stop when it comes to either changing America or protecting it. SCOTUS blog Sarah Isger says that's wrong.
Basically, every narrative we have about the Supreme Court is wrong. This idea that it's a 6-3 partisan court, the idea that the court is, you know, the one that's left to decide all of our most important issues.
That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. You know, my mother was in a nursing home for 6 years before she died, and in that time, she was in and out of hospice. So I've always wanted to talk about hospice on my show because they perform such an important function. Happily, my guest today, Diana Jean Lewis of Hawley, Pennsylvania, has agreed to come on and talk about her time working for hospice. You may have seen Diana at a Robert Tellefson performance. She's the woman behind the man, but while he's performing, she's out front, changing strings, moving guitars and such. Whatever she does, she is a quiet force, and I'm told not always so quiet. Today she's here with me, and she's not only going to share her journey to hospice, but also tell us the whys, whats, and wheres of hospice. Here we go. Diana, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so happy to have you with me.
Thanks for having me.
As always, I love hearing about the history of my guests. So let's start there.
I grew up in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. I was born in Lansdale, Pennsylvania.
Where is that exactly?
It's about 2 hours from Philly, maybe.
Oh, it's that far from Philly. Okay.
I've been gone so long, you know, I don't even know. Maybe an hour, a little over an hour from Philadelphia.
Yeah, because I think it's kind of a commuter hub now to Philadelphia.
Lots of train stops throughout there to take you down to Philadelphia.
Yeah. So you have two much younger sisters.
I do.
I was wondering if you did a lot of babysitting for them when you were growing up.
I definitely did. You did not see me without those two when I was younger.
What was that like for you? I mean, you know, a lot of girls who have younger siblings wouldn't like toting them around and taking care of them. But I was wondering for you, because you're a real born caregiver, and you know, our early years inform our core self. I was wondering if that kind of planted the idea for you of becoming like, you know, somebody in the medical field, a caregiver.
You know, I never thought so. I honestly don't know where that came from because I just always knew that I wanted to. No, when I was younger, did I enjoy watching my kid sisters? No, because, you know, go do what I wanted to go do. And a lot of times I would take them with me. Like there was a local playground and we would all go hang out there. So I would take them with me and they could just, you know, I could still hang out with my friends and they could still play on the playground and do stuff. So I was lucky that I had that, you know, in nearby. Yeah. But I would not say that inspired my caregiving. No.
Okay.
I love them, but no one thought I was going to have children because they always saw me with them so much when I was younger.
How much younger were they than you?
They are 10 and 11 years younger than me.
Oh, wow. So that's quite a difference.
Yeah, we have different fathers. So that is
why. Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, like so many women, you had this desire to be in the medical field, but you got married and you did have children, despite what everybody thought, and you put your dreams aside. When did those dreams get switched back on?
Probably when my kids got a little bit older. And I'm going to say, okay, so we moved up to Hemlock Farms from Lansdale. We moved up to the Poconos to Hemlock Farms when my son was an infant and my oldest was 5. And then my husband joined the fire department and it seemed pretty cool. So I joined the fire department as well as a first. He was an EMT, and I think he was a firefighter for a while as well. And I became a first responder. Like, I took the first responder classes and became a first responder.
Yeah, you know, that was a little confusing to me, because I thought first responders were EMTs, but no, not necessarily. What does the job of a first responder at Hemlock Farms entail?
Well, first responder means different things, I feel like. In the real world, I feel like it means like the police officers that are first to respond to the scene.
Okay.
Like public safety officers and stuff like that. As far as EMS, first responders that arrive, I mean, that's also like firemen and the, you know, the ambulance. But first responders as part of an ambulance crew, there's like a, in my experience with the fire department, there was a driver, there was an EMT, and there was a first responder. You could run with just a driver and an EMT, but you cannot run with just a driver and a first responder.
Right.
First responder, as far as part of an ambulance crew, they assist the EMT.
Mm-hmm. And then you did train to become an EMT.
I did.
An EMT is different from a paramedic, right?
The EMT is basic life support. A paramedic is advanced life support.
I see. So what exactly does an EMT do? What are some of the functions that you performed as an EMT?
First aid, like bandaging wounds, stabilizing injuries, oxygen, sometimes CPR.
Mm. And what kind of training does a person have to have? Because, you know, I know the reason I'm asking you these questions is I'm very interested in it. And it, I see a lot of the volunteer ambulance squads here in, you know, the Poconos and the Catskills always asking for volunteers. So maybe people just need to know what it is that they would do if they decided to be on an ambulance crew, for example. What does an EMT do? You said they bandage wounds. They sometimes have to do CPR. Do you have any memories of an experience that you had as an EMT that was particularly gratifying?
Yeah, I do, actually. Everything happens for a reason. We got called out for a call that meant nothing. There really was nothing going on. Wasn't necessarily an emergent situation.
Mm-hmm.
But when we all got back to the station, we were all there for the next call that went out that was an asthmatic child. And luckily, we were all there. We responded immediately and we got the child to the hospital, and the child made a she made a full recovery.
What do you do with a child who's having like an asthma attack?
He applied oxygen, and then we called for the paramedics, because the paramedics are allowed to give treatments such as like a nebulizer treatment and stuff.
Oh, okay. What's the training to become an EMT? How involved is it? How long is it? What is it that you're learning?
I don't remember how long it was, to be honest. I know it was, you know, at least 3 weeks. But there's a lot of books. There's a lot of book learning. And then you do the practical exam where you show what you know.
Mm-hmm.
There are scenarios with dummies, you know, at the firehouse, and you have to go through step by step what you would do if it was a real situation.
I remember I took a CPR course, and I always the thing I remember the most of it is, Annie, are you okay? Are you all right?
The scene is safe. You have to make sure the scene is safe.
Scene is safe. Yeah.
Not safe, you can't do anything.
And, you know, interesting. I think I heard that the protocol for giving CPR has changed, because you used to do the two puffs and then the compressions. But now tell me if I'm wrong. Are they still doing the puffs?
I honestly have no idea. I think we're about to get recertified in my current job. So I don't know what the protocols are for CPR right now.
Yeah, I think it's changed quite a bit. So that'll be interesting for you.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you'll soon find out.
Very soon find out. Yes, I will.
Now, the third leg of the ambulance crew is the driver. But the driver doesn't always just drive, right?
No. The driver could be a firefighter.
Oh, okay.
But the driver does usually, I say he, but they're also she. They help load the patient. They help bring things out to you. You know, the jump bags and the oxygen, they will bring, you know, you can just yell out stuff and they'll go get it for you.
What is a jump bag?
Jump bag is supplies that you carry on the ambulance.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great. So When you were working in a nursing home, you did that for 6 years.
Yes.
What were your duties in the nursing home?
I was a med tech. I was, responsible for handing out medications, personal care. Yeah, all of those things.
Were you volunteering on the ambulance squad at the same time?
Think I had given it up by then. There's a slight chance I might have been doing it every other weekend, but by that point, I think I had pretty much given it up.
Now, I know you told me you really loved working in the nursing home. What do you consider the best part of your job working in the nursing home?
I worked on the Alzheimer's unit. They're my favorite patients. Always have been, always will be. Probably the best part of my job was when they recognized me and you could diffuse a situation because they trust you. Don't know who I am. Like, they don't know my name. Like, they can't be like, oh, that's Diana. She takes care of me every day. But they're like, I know this girl. She's never hurt me and I trust her. And when you see that in their face, it just, you got through. And you could see a little piece of them, like how they used to be. That was my favorite.
I see. What was it about the Alzheimer's patients that touched you the way it did?
Everybody forgets them. I could cry, honestly. Everybody just forgets them. They stop treating them like people. They're still in there.
Yeah, there's still a person in there.
So easy to just dismiss them because,
Yeah. And I think sometimes if a worker doesn't have the kind of devotion that you have, for example, they may think, okay, this is easy. I could just leave so and so there. They're not going to be able to tell anybody. I didn't come in to change them on time. So yeah, it's a very sad situation. I personally have seen when my mother was in the nursing home, such incredible care, such wonderful care from the aides, coming, they were attached to my mother and they treated her like a human being. She didn't have Alzheimer's or anything, but she was there for a long time. She couldn't get out of bed.
Right.
And it meant so much to me. Okay, Diana, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I didn't mean to interrupt you. It's not a job. It's a calling. You cannot treat it like a typical job because it's not just a job.
It is a calling.
And
And I think, some people that go into it, have the calling, and some people don't, just like anything else, right? Okay. So anyone can see, listening to you, that your experiences seem to have prepared you for the work that you did in hospice. We're going to take a quick break here and come right back to hear more of Diana Jean Lewis's journey. This is Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. Stay tuned for more Catskill Character on Radio Catskill.
Old School Session, James Brown birthday extravaganza. We like to do this every year. The weekend of his birthday, we like to do a special for James Brown. The Godfather's soul gave us the funk, no doubt. So right here on Old School Sessions, we're going to honor James Brown, Godfather's soul.
4 hours of James Brown songs and samples, starting at 8 tonight on Old School Sessions, only on Radio Catskill.
This week on This American Life, the entire time we've been at war with Iran, the whole country has been under an internet blackout. We hear from 12 people who managed to get messages out. A guy running a pizza shop, a bodybuilder making self-help videos in the park, a woman whose boyfriend loves the Iranian regime, and she does not. Living through war and a blackout. That's this week.
Tonight at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. This week, it's a live event from the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We're on stage in Seattle with native food experts, standard bearers for the city's incredible Vietnamese and Filipino food, chefs and bakers. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg with today's guest from Hawley, Pennsylvania, Diana Jean Lewis. In the first half of the show, Diana told us a bit about how she became a caregiver, starting with babysitting for her younger sisters, to her work on the Hemlock Farms ambulance squad, where she was a first responder and then became an EMT. She worked for 6 years as an aide in a nursing home, which is where we left off. Now we're going to hear about hospice from Diana, who knows all about it, having worked as a certified home health aide, that's a CHHA, for hospice, a job she absolutely adored. Diana, before we talk about your experience working at hospice, how about telling the listener what hospice is and what it isn't? There's often some confusion about that.
Hospice is end-of-life care, where you are treating the symptoms of the disease, not the disease itself. And you are just trying to make someone comfortable on the end of their journey and trying to prepare the family as gently as possible as well.
It's comfort, not cure. And one of the things that you were pointing out to me before is if a patient is starting to go into that final stage, a lot of times the family gets frantic and they want you to bring them to the hospital, but that doesn't happen in hospice, correct?
No.
What influenced you, Diana, to take the leap and become a hospice worker?
So I was working in the nursing home, and as much as I loved it, hospice came into our nursing home. I always felt guilty and horrible because, you know, we have 19 patients, 18 patients for two people, and you have someone that's passing away and you want to spend time with them, but you can't because you have all these other people that need you. And, you know, I watched these hospice people come in and I never met one that wasn't amazing at their job.
So they came in to sort of augment what was going on in the nursing home and they could spend time.
Yes.
With the patient. Yeah. So that made you decide, you know what? I want to do that.
That's for me. Yep.
Hospice will go where the patient is. If they're in the nursing home, like we just said, they'll go there. They'll go to the patient's home. Mm-hmm. And there's always a team. Tell us about the team and how often the patient will see each member of the team.
So in my experience, it starts with like the social worker and there's a chaplain. Sometimes, a lot of times there's volunteers. The people they will see the most is the nurse and the hospice aide.
They see the aide every day.
Yeah, the aide comes anywhere from 3 to 5 times a week.
And then I guess the next person that they would see more frequently is the nurse. How often do they see the nurse typically?
Typically, the nurse comes out 1 to 2 times a week. If there's a problem, she'll come out every day until that problem is resolved.
And you said they have a chaplain. There is a very spiritual aspect to hospice work. Tell us a little bit about what the chaplain does.
Well, every patient has specific needs and some people have specific spiritual needs. And we have chaplains that can come out and address those needs for you.
And will they see the families also?
Yeah, I've seen families and the chaplain and the patient, like around, everybody's gathered around the bedside praying.
How often does the social worker come out?
I want to say at least like once a month. If there's an issue, they will come out immediately to try to address that issue and get it resolved.
Now, there's also a hospice doctor.
We do have a medical director that oversees everything, yes.
And does he ever go out into the nursing home or the homes?
In my experience, that was not the case.
My mother was in Florida. I don't know if each state has a different set of protocols. I remember her nurse deciding that she needed to have a foot doctor see her. So they brought in a foot doctor. The team is that core team, and then they have people that they call upon for these specific problems that the patient may have.
Yes.
So it's quite an undertaking. One of the misunderstandings is, when does one go into hospice?
As long as you have a terminal diagnosis, you can go on hospice.
I think sometimes doctors are reluctant to refer patients to hospice. Why do you think that is?
No one wants to give up. You have to know when there's nothing left that can be done. Because they can present differently at different times.
Anyone can kind of initiate a referral to hospice. In other words, look into it for their loved one. But they have to have a doctor to certify that the patient has a terminal illness with a prognosis of 6 months or less, as you said. And there are 4 levels of care. The first one is the routine home care, and that's the most common.
That is the aide coming out every day, the nurse coming out one to a few times a week. That is the typical day-to-day care.
Then there's the continuous home care 24/7 where the nurses come in.
Sometimes if there's a crisis or the family is just super stressed, they're able to get 24-hour care.
Right. It's a specific short-term amount of time. Then there's the inpatient care, which typically hospice does not refer patients back to the hospital. In some cases, this will happen. And what would those cases be?
If somebody falls and they have a laceration, they are allowed to go out and get stitches and come back.
Or if they break a bone or something like that. And then the last level of care is the respite care.
A lot of caregivers were experienced burnout, which is, you know, they're doing everything 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for this person, and they're not taking any time out for themselves to try to care for themselves, because it is a temporary situation, but it's a temporary situation that can go on for a while.
Yeah.
And that is a hospice home. Some nursing homes even have a hospice room where they can take someone for like a week, give the family a break.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Let's look at the financial end of things. It's my understanding that the Medicare hospice benefit covers 85% of patients, and it's also covered by Medicaid and private insurance. What else does hospice include besides the care?
Any equipment you may need. Usually they supply a hospital bed, sometimes a bedside commode. If people are still able to get around, they'll supply a shower chair, a raised toilet seat. Anything to make it easier on the patient getting around and staying as independent for as long as possible. Also, some of the supplies, a lot of the wound care supplies, creams, incontinence supplies, you know, up to a certain point, are supplied by hospice as well.
I know you had patients, of course, who unfortunately had dementia. When you're dealing with a dementia patient, you said that you live in their world. Tell the listener what that means.
Everybody's first instinct is to be like, oh, no, it's not 1945. You're not getting ready to get married. But that just confuses them, it agitates them, and it makes it worse. So you just kind of have to meet them where they are. You have to get into the situation as much as you can while also trying to redirect them.
You had a situation that you explained to me about a man who thought you were his wife. Let's tell the listener that story.
There was this gentleman. He was always so disappointed when his wife would come visit him, because you're like, you know, this is your wife. But they don't always recognize them as who they are at the moment. They're thinking of the person they married like 50 years ago, and they're looking at that face in their head. And apparently I looked significantly like this man's wife back in the day, and he was reliving an argument they had once had. And I just showed up at 8 o'clock in the morning to do my job, and I find myself in the middle of a very heated argument. Thought I was going to get divorced, and I was not even married to this man. But he was reliving something that had happened a very long time ago, and I just kept trying to give him answers and work through it with him. I don't remember all of the specifics. I just remember at the end, we were finally done. I'm emotionally drained. And he looks like he feels better, so that's great. But then at the very end of it, he looks down and he's like, you're not wearing your ring. And of course I'm not wearing my ring, because I'm not married to him. But I was like, oh, I said, well, you know, I always take it off when I clean. And he was like, oh, yeah. So yeah, I got away with that. So
for half an hour, you took on the persona of his wife. And we were talking before about it, and I said it was like being an actress. And you said, well, his wife was an actress.
Yeah. As an actress.
Part of your training addresses compassionate communication with both the patient and their family. So I was wondering, do you always tell the family the truth about what's happening to their loved one?
I tried to. Sometimes they don't want to hear it. They don't want to see it. And it's so hard to make them see it. But I always try to tell the truth or sugarcoat it as much as possible if I had to.
I'm sure they ask you a lot of questions and you have to try to answer them compassionately while at the same time you're being honest. That's a skill that I guess you acquire as you're moving through your experience, right, as a hospice worker. When you work so closely with these patients, ultimately, you're going to become attached. What do you do for your own self-care?
I was terrible at that, but I got better at it. I like to walk, and I live in this beautiful area, so I would take a walk along the river. I would take a walk along the lake. I love to read. A lot of times, my poor boyfriend would get a phone call in the middle of the day of me hysterically crying, and he had no idea what I was saying, but he would stay on the phone with me until I was done. You know, I'd be okay and then just keep going.
Yeah, people do tend to forget about themselves. And, you know, I would always say to people, well, if you go down, the ship goes down. So you have to take care of yourself. There's just no question about it. What do you think about the end of life? You know, I've heard a lot of stories about people seeing people at the foot of their bed. My own father, when he was dying, kept talking about this man and woman that would come to his bed every night. How much credibility do you give that, that that is actually people from the other side come to usher the patient over the rainbow bridge, whatever they call it? Yeah, I don't think it's the rainbow bridge. That's for animals.
I think it is too. I wasn't going to say that, but you know, I absolutely believe that's true. But in order to do hospice, you really have to have a spiritual side to yourself, and you have to believe in those kinds of things and the door being open between the worlds, I feel. And yeah, I absolutely 100% believe someone comes to take you home.
And of course, you're going to see things that other people who don't work in hospice never see, right?
Yes.
So you know what you're talking about, obviously. But unfortunately, you suffered an injury at work and you could no longer perform the physical aspect of the job. That must have been so hard for you, Diana.
It broke my heart, honestly.
Yeah. Well, what kind of work are you doing now?
I got very, very lucky. I work in a family practice here in town called Lakota Family Practice. Ellen Marie Luca is one of our providers, and Samantha Lecky is our other provider. She just joined us very recently, and I never thought I would find a job I loved as much. It will never take the place, but I love my Lakota family. I'm so happy they gave me a chance, and I love what I do there.
You know, it's so fantastic that you were able to stay in the medical field, and I think you told me you started off as a receptionist, but now you do other things as well, right?
Yeah, I started out as the front desk because I absolutely had zero idea of what to do from this end of things. And I slowly learned other skills, and yeah.
What are some of those skills?
My favorite t-shirt says, I stab people for a living, because that is legitimately what I do.
Oh.
I poke people with sharp objects all day long. I do a lot of the injections, some immunizations. I give testosterone shots. I give a lot of weight loss shots, and I draw blood.
Well, Diana, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. You know, all these jobs that you've done are vitally important and certainly very demanding on so many levels. And you have such a wealth of knowledge and experience. I can't tell you how happy I am that you agreed to come in and speak about them.
Well, thank you so much for thinking of me and for wanting to have me on your show.
You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. My guest today has been Diana Jean Lewis of Hawley, Pennsylvania. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 11:30, and I hope you like the new time and continue to join me to hear stories of fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Radio Catskill, keeping Pennsylvania voters connected. Pennsylvania's primary election is May 19th. The last day to register or change your party status to vote in the Pennsylvania primary is May 4th. Voters can apply for a mail-in ballot for any reason. The last day to apply for an absentee or mail-in ballot for the primary election is May 12th. More info is at vote.pa.gov. This is Radio Catskill, keeping Pennsylvania voters connected.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency is fighting for its life.
I've never been a big fan of FEMA. It really doesn't get the job done, you know.
FEMA's a disaster.
FEMA's a dirty word.
People are waking up in droves to the FEMA camps.
How did the agency tasked with saving us become so distrusted and despised? Listen to American Emergency, The Movement to Kill FEMA, on this week's On the Media from WNYC. This afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Josh Gondelman wondered, yeah, that Chinese robot won a half marathon, but is it truly human?
Do you think the robot can't stop telling other robots that it just ran a half marathon?
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us this week as we venture to San Diego to talk to the anchorman who made that city famous, Ron Burgundy himself. That's the news quiz that always stays classy. Wait, Wait from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill.